Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. You haven't tuned in before? This is a podcast where we are running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. And right now we're up to episode 4, season 7. It's Gambit, part 1. Directed by Peter Lorentzen, teleplay goes to Naren Shankar, and the story credit goes to Naren Shankar as well. It aired back on October 11th, 1993. After hearing a rumor that Captain Picard has been murdered while on an archaeological dig, the Enterprise crew sets out to find the smugglers who may have been responsible. Clay is here to talk about this one. We're going to talk about the first part and the first part only of the Gambit two-parter right after this.
Sir.
I read your report, Commander. My condolences to you and to your crew. Captain Picard's death is a loss to the entire Federation. Now, I see that you've asked to postpone your mission to the Argus sector. For what reason?
I have a request, sir. I would like to conduct an investigation into Captain Picard's death.
The Desikan authorities have jurisdiction in this case, Commander.
I know that, sir. Frankly, I don't have much confidence in the authorities on Desikan 2. There's every reason to believe that they're corrupt.
Well, I suspect you're right. The question remains, are you the one to pursue this?
The captain's death hit me pretty hard. And I may not be completely objective. But there's no one who is more determined. I won't rest until I find out who's responsible.
Gambit, not just the name of an X-Man, it's the name of a two-parter in TNG's seventh season. Clay, how are you?
Good. I was, as you're saying, I was very disappointed by the lack of playing cards, exploding playing cards, and smooth-talking Cajuns in this episode.
Yeah, there's no mention of kinetic energy or anything. It's like that's the one thing you need in a episode called Gambit. I guess what's kind of weird is that This was one of the episodes for people like who follow along with the show and like leave comments and everything. Gambit was one of the ones that a few people said they were looking forward to us talking about, very cryptically too. They didn't say why they wanted us to talk about it.
Okay.
I didn't.
Clearly, the reason is, I mean, I know what it is.
Yeah.
But you should tell me what you think it is.
I don't think it's bad. Like, I don't think people think this is a bad episode. It might just be this is one of the better ones of the season, although I don't know that for sure. I think this one's interesting just because we're only going to be talking about the first part in this one. And the first part in this one had me thinking that if they had made this into one of the movies, it might be the second best movie.
Okay.
Just from the first episode of this two-parter.
All right.
I thought it was really cinematic in a way that the show usually doesn't do, and there was like a lot of action. It was kind of it's like a swashbuckling adventure. You know, they're basically space pirates,
right?
And the show doesn't really do that. So I was kind of maybe I liked it more than it is objectively good, just because it's kind of unique at this point. Like I've had a bunch of episodes. I've had like Geordi had an episode, like you know, Data's Descent and Liaisons, and it's like those are just kind of the general episodes that the show does at this point. Mm-hmm. And this one felt really different to me. So I liked it a little bit for that.
Well, one of the things for me that stood out, this isn't fair to the episode, but I don't know if you know if this director of this episode has done a lot of Star Trek or what, but I always get slightly annoyed, or I shouldn't say annoyed, but I notice direction more when they do the thing where they clearly have dropped the director's credit right after something that is, you know, a little bit more flashy or like a nice camera move or something.
Yep.
And so I was paying attention to this episode from that standpoint because they do that in this episode. I can't remember exactly what it is. I don't know if it's a blocking move or something. But I didn't think this episode was very particularly well directed or acted, really.
No, I might disagree about the direction. I didn't really pick up on it, but I was laughing because I think Patrick Stewart playing a swarmy rogue really feels like bad acting. to me.
Yeah, which, I mean, you can, I guess you could kind of look at that on a level of like, that's how good of an actor Patrick Stewart is that when Picard has to act, it comes off as bad
acting. Bad acting, yeah.
But it just might be bad acting, because I don't know how much Patrick Stewart knows about being a lowlife.
No, it's, yeah, that his acting really struck me. He delivers everything very, like body. He's like, oh, Baron, you think this is where I'm going to be? It's like, what the hell is going
on?
Yeah,
every scene where he has to play the bad guy, it seems like I've just walked in on a play.
Yes, yes.
You know, or like the directors just said, all right, now we'll take it back from the point where Riker enters the room and you're mad. Okay, go.
Yep.
And like he's got that like, you know, that certain way of sitting that transfers like on in theater, yep. But not really so much in TV. I don't know. It just seemed very, very put on.
Yeah, it did. I totally agree with that. It seemed very theatrical and over the top for him.
But he wasn't even the one that really stood out as much as the first, maybe, after the opening cold open, which I thought was pretty good, man, that scene with Riker and Troy, ugh, woof.
I've noticed the show in its seventh season has started to get a little bit melodramatic. Like, the scenes where, I don't think there was any reason for Troy to be crying in that scene.
It was really over the top.
It was. It didn't feel earned. It wasn't like, you know, as an audience, you know Picard is not dead. Like, you know
right,
he's out
right.
there somewhere. The characters don't know it, but there's no reason to play. All the other times we've seen these characters dealing with stuff, they handle it very well. And it was really over the top. And Frakes can be really terrific, but he's at his weakest in moments like that when he strikes me like a soap opera actor.
Yeah. Both of them felt very soap opera-y. I mean, I don't know if it was just after seven seasons, Marina Sirtis was like, finally they gave me something to do.
Right. I'm going to lay into it.
Yeah, but it was just, like, even, I think maybe that was where they laid in the director's name, because there's a blocking move that's really awkward where they're talking, maybe I'm thinking of the Data scene, but basically
he's in the background, right? And he sort of comes up at her. Is that when it happens?
Yeah, they're both talking, and then very clearly Riker gets up, walks towards towards the screen, for lack of a better term, front of the stage rather, and continues to do the dialogue facing the camera, but like with his head turned back.
I remember that. Yeah.
It's a really, really gross blocking move that really stood out to me.
Okay. Just FYI, the director is Peter Lauritsen, who has directed, I think, but he's more of a producer on the show. So he's more of a writer angle. So I don't know how many he's directed before this, but he has directed Star Trek before. This might be his actual first episode. I don't really know.
I didn't like Data either. Like, at least in the first half of it. I don't know. I thought his delivery was not good.
I'm torn here. I'll have a lot more to say about Data when we get into the second episode.
Yeah.
But the Data stuff here, he also felt melodramatic to me.
Right.
Like, he was playing it as though Data had emotion in these things.
Mm-hmm.
And he really shouldn't, and it works better, especially his I thought that as a two-parter, they started laying the groundwork for stuff that was going to happen in the second part pretty well in this one, where Worf is starting to, like, sort of get rubbed the wrong way by Data in command early
right.
on, although he doesn't actually throw it back in his face at any point. And I just thought that the Data stuff was really... Spine was really delivering it very melodramatically and very sort of like epic. We're on like an epic adventure type thing.
Mm.
Didn't think it was deserving, and I don't think it served the storyline of Data being in command, why it would rub Worf the wrong way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, Worf's the go get him, you know, we need to do stuff, and Data's much more of I'm going to sit here and collect evidence until we figure out what the best thing to do would be in the future.
Right,
and they just sort of go off on that.
I not to totally change gears, but what you're saying about it being a movie, it almost feels like they were trying to go for that kind of scope, because in that cold open, those aliens are really cool. I mean, the makeup jobs overall in both of these episodes are really good.
Yeah, aliens we haven't
especially
really seen.
Compared to the fucking the fucking fly-by-night job on the guys from Liaisons where they just gave them gray jumpsuits and like a smudge on their forehead or whatever.
They were saving the effects group for this episode, costuming or something.
The hair care budget alone must have been astronomical.
It's funny you mention that. I think that you watched the episode with me where they went to, we were making the joke, it was like a poor man's Mos Eisley. Redemption, or what it was, maybe it wasn't Redemption. I forget what episode it was, but where they had to go get information and they talked to the piano singing lady.
Yep, with that weird hole in her face.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh. I feel that Gambit, to me, as I've watched so many of these episodes, there are callbacks almost every scene to something else that's happened previously.
Yeah.
That scene felt very reminiscent of whatever that episode was. And the alien that they eventually, Yarnik or whatever, his name is Canary, spelled backwards because he sings. that alien, it was played by James Cromwell in the Redemption storyline. Or not Redemption, in the Birthright storyline where Worf finds Klingon. So it's not Cromwell in this episode, but it's the exact same makeup for that thing.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. And then,
good makeup.
Yeah, it is good makeup. And then Riker gets to rough that alien up. He gets roughed up in the other episode, too. Yeah, there was a lot of callbacks. I thought that the name Picard uses is Galen, which is a reference to the Chase episode where his professor is Professor Galen.
Oh, really? Oh, that reminds me. The one thing I did want to bring up, because I thought it was like the timeline of when these shows were on is not completely clear for me. So I thought this was like a nice crossover moment. But the admiral that Riker talks to, does he not say Admiral Chakotay?
Yeah, that was I was like, how do they explain this? And it's not Chakotay from Voyager whatsoever.
Yeah,
but
that's a very specific name.
Like it's Admiral Sitting Bull Chakotay.
Yeah, that's like if he had gotten a message that Admiral James T. Kirk wanted to talk to him. It's not the same James T. Kirk. It's a different one.
That's why he has to throw. Yeah, that's why he throws his. I was laughing at that too. I thought, how are they going to? Because Voyager is not on at this point, and also they'd have to go back in time or something to make him an admiral at that point.
Well, yeah, I was thinking like the first thing I thought of was, oh wait, isn't there some sort of like weird time travel element to Voyager? Is this like Chakotay when he arrives back in the I don't know. And then very quickly, I was like, oh no, it's just not related at all.
No, that was also very weird. I mean, I thought that the device that the bad guy Baron uses is very reminiscent of the Cardassian torture stuff in Chain of Command.
Yeah, it's like the Cardassian torture thing light.
Yes, yeah, a little nicer. It causes a little bit less pain. You seem to recover from it better.
Mm-hmm.
Data's in command. We've seen that a lot. Yep. And the ending is very reminiscent of Best of Both Worlds.
Yeah. I guess you're right. It's kind of like reverse Best of Both Worlds because they're firing on the Enterprise.
Yes, and you see the impact of it, I guess, as opposed to like it not working whatsoever.
Yeah,
yeah. This is just a swashbuckling adventure story. I thought that the first part was very different from what TNG usually is, and I think that's why I liked it a little bit more. Like they don't really do a lot of techno babble in the first part. It's a lot of basically a chase story and trying to figure out what happened to Picard.
Yep.
Here's
a question.
Sure.
Because it's been established that I don't listen to all of these podcasts.
Absolutely.
Although I don't know if the previous one has come out by the time this one is recording, but. This is not connected to at all to the episode that came before it, right?
No, it's not.
Okay, because the thing that I was thinking was hurting this episode the most, and maybe it would work better if it was a movie, is I feel like this episode is hurt by the fact that the storytelling of the show is episodic and not serialized.
Yeah.
Because just over both of these episodes, there's a lot of stuff that happens and a lot of stakes that are put in place that by the way the show functions don't actually have any weight to them.
Sure.
Like the first sequence when it's like, oh yeah, this guy I really liked that first, the cold open, especially because they don't give you any exposition about it.
Right. That's where the crew members are pretending to like interrogate that CD bar to figure out what happened to. We don't know who it is, but he's a smooth head human. So you can...
Right. And they don't make any comment about, oh, that sounds like the captain, you know, anything like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, just starting the show with the presumption that Picard is dead, it's like, all right, well, he's not.
Right.
So there's no weight to that story point. You know, it's like a lot of that stuff where it's like, well, these two guys are not supposed to... Like, the stuff later, I can't remember if it was in this one or if it was in the second one when they start getting into the pitting Riker against...
Galen.
And be like, well, you know, you're the one that's going to have to kill him. It's like, well, he's obviously not going to fucking kill him.
Right.
You know, it's not like in the original series when Spock and Kirk had to fight each other and Spock was like out of his mind horny or whatever
right.
that thing is yep. that he has to do on Vulcan, Pon Farr or whatever
yep,
it's called.
Yep, Pon Farr.
You know, at that point, you don't know what's going to happen. They already got rid of one captain. Who knows? They might get rid of the second.
Right.
But, you know, and that's not that deep into the show, but when you're seven seasons in, it's like, all right, well, I don't know. Maybe this is just my way of saying that I'm kind of getting tired of the show.
Yeah.
It's not that I enjoy it less, and I don't know how you're doing, having watched all of them. But I don't know. I just it's really tough for me to really get engaged by these episodes that really I don't know. They're just sort of like story of the week episodes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I agree that I'm starting to see the stories repeat themselves.
This will be known as the episode where I have my frustrated meltdown about Star Trek: The Next Generation.
I'm starting to notice the repetition in the storylines a lot more. And I think that it's, you know, it would be nice for like a character refresh or something, or just to. I'm a little bit, you know, we're still early in the seventh season, but I know this isn't going to happen. I'm a little bit annoyed that they aren't doing character-focused episodes.
Yeah,
in a final
season. I was just going to say that because I think that's the thing that's bugging me is because I know I've established in previous episodes how the stuff that's really standing out to me at this point are the character things. And it's like these guys know the characters so well that they have these really great character moments inside of shows that maybe aren't that great. And in this one, it's so plot-focused that you don't get any of that stuff barely at all. I mean, when you get it in the second episode, it's really refreshing.
It is, and it's the best part of the second episode, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Stuff. Yeah, no.
And it's just, I don't know. It's just when they resort back to a plot for plot's sake episode, it really makes it not as fun to watch.
Yeah. And that's funny because like I said before, as I thought this is kind of a repetitious episode, I did like that it does feel a little bit different. It feels very action-y, and it kind of reminds me of Starship Mine, which was the season 6 Die Hard episode or something. Picard is stuck on the ship with a bunch of terrorists.
Yep.
It kind of reminds me of that. But at the same time, it's a little bit different in just that the action is so big. Like, for instance, I noticed this as it was happening, and I looked it up. The phaser fight scene in the first one where Riker, Geordi, and Worf are on the planet.
Where everyone just keeps shooting at Geordi?
Yes, and everyone can hit rocks with dead-eye aim, but no one can hit anybody else. That is the biggest phaser fight in Star Trek film. Like,
really?
Yeah, it was over 70 phaser shots.
Like, including the movies?
Yeah. Yeah,
going even in First Contact, where they're just ice and Borg throughout
as
the ship?
As a scene, in a single scene. Yeah, that's the biggest fight scene that they've had. Huh. And I noticed it because it did feel like it went on. You know, I was so engrossed I didn't even really make a joke, except I did that when Riker told the woman to run over in those trees. I was like, "Oh, Riker, you dirty dog!" as that was going on. But yeah,
it was nice to see the redheaded. Stand-in.
Yep.
Get actual FaceTime. She's been in a bunch of episodes.
Oh, has she? Oh, good.
Yeah. I believe. I think she was actually Crusher's stand-in.
Oh, that makes sense.
And they ended up using her as like a recurring extra.
I like stuff like that. Like, what a career to have, to be the stand-in and then get your chance to go into the action here. All this said, in terms of the first part, I don't really understand what's driving any of the action. I understand that this guy wants to get some artifacts of time gone past.
Man, I hate the weapon MacGuffin thing. It's like, I'm so done with that plot point. They use it in every single Marvel movie, and it's really fucking boring.
Just like you're trying to assemble the ultimate
weapon. Yeah, like, which is really sad, because in the Marvel movies, they're building to the best version of that, which is the Infinity Gauntlet. Mm-hmm. By the time they get there, you're not going to give a shit. But it's like, it's such a lazy plot motivation where it's like, well, there's this ultimate weapon thing that the bad guy's trying to assemble, and we have to stop him from doing that. Well, what else happens? Well, that's pretty much it.
Yep.
You know, I don't know. I just hate it.
I'll have a lot more to say about that in the second part.
Yeah.
They reveal what it is, but they reveal what the weapon is in the second part.
That's the thing, too. Like, I think you're right. I don't think they really bring up what the weapon is or what exactly they're looking for until the second episode.
Yep.
And in the first one, it's just a bunch of guys looking at fucking pottery.
Broken pots.
Broken pots.
Yeah, they're not even whole pots. They're just broken.
Which Picard loves, as we know from, I can't remember what episode it was, but there was that other episode where they're coming back from a planet and he's like really engrossed in the broken pot he's got in his fucking lap.
That's why he's so enthralled with the storyline. He just wants to know what these pots are, and he's analyzing them for something that I don't quite understand. And they're apparently Romulan left or Vulcan left or something. It's very confusing to me because we'll get into this more in the second part. I'm very confused. I think they threw in like one twist too many for me, in terms of the Romulan / Vulcan woman.
I don't know that. Honestly, that one, when it happened, I was kind of like, oh, all right, well, that's, I wasn't really expecting that, so it was at least something different,
right?
But you know, we'll talk about that when we get to it.
And then the sort of final point I had about the crew that they're on. First, I felt that the episode, it was kind of cool. It's kind of one of those things where you can see them inserting stuff to allow the next step to happen. Like, this is a ship that, you know, you can't read it on sensors. It has some kind of energy absorbing thing that's like, you can't track it. It just goes away. It's like, why? I feel like it's unnecessary steps when you have in-universe cloaking devices.
Oh, and also that was the first thing I thought of when they explain away how Picard wasn't vaporized by them. Oh, well, they have a gun that's connected to their transporter, and when they shoot you, it transports you out of there.
Did you? Like, I actually thought that was kind of ingenious, because I didn't really remember how they did it and how they were going to get around the guy not lying about the fact that Picard was vaporized.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a interesting way to do it, but when he said that, I was like, oh, that's pretty interesting. But it also screamed, you know, we wrote ourselves into a corner. How do we get out of this?
Right,
you know?
To shoot him with a transporter gun.
Which, I mean, I can't. I'm not going to take points away from them for that, because I mean, that is a pretty interesting way to do it.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
But it did. It just felt that way.
Yeah, I feel like they're inserting steps just to sort of get them to the next stage here, and it feels very artificial sometimes. And you know, if I was remaking this as a movie, I feel that the space pirate crew. The space pirate crew doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because this guy has this torture device, right, that he uses to keep them in line.
Yeah.
They all give him a fair amount of lip, all things considered. Like, and they don't seem like they're enslaved by him. They seem like they're minorly inconvenienced by the fact that he can cause them pain at any point.
Right. They don't. I mean, yeah. It took me a minute to realize that everybody had those things on. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just Riker and Picard. I thought it was like, you know, how you get hazed in the Space Pirate League or something.
Right.
Because everybody else just seemed to be, you know, part of the crew. They all had similar hairdos.
Yes. Similar fashion senses.
Yeah. And there was one guy, the short, like, other guy.
The engineer guy.
Yeah, who for like the first 15 minutes I was sure was Mike from Breaking Bad. but it's not.
That's too bad.
But yeah, like that, it just seems like I don't know why they all have to have that, because they all seem pretty cool with what they're doing.
Right,
you know?
Exactly. That was my or have them be more, you know, under the thumb of this guy, and Picard somehow works with them. It doesn't seem like it's necessary for them to have these devices on them.
Yeah, it's like if Han Solo and Luke showed up to save Princess Leia, and like Han, Chewie, and Luke and Obi-Wan all had torture devices attached to their necks.
Yep.
That's all I got. That metaphor didn't really work as well as I thought it would. But.
Well, they'd all have those. There is that torture device in Empire Strikes Back, right? The torture Han with or whatever. I think it's been a long time since we've watched those movies.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't even ask him any questions.
He knew all the answers. I don't. I think that this one, I was enthralled through the first part of it. Just because it felt new and true to me, even though I totally agree with all of the sort of criticism you brought up, like the melodrama felt a little bit odd. Data feels a little bit off. Patrick Stewart acting as Galen feels a little bit weird. I'm enamored by his high riding boots, though, as Galen, which is very nice. And the sort of idea of what they're doing, it felt almost clever enough where it wasn't earned. I also feel like we've seen the thing where someone on an enemy ship communicates a certain code to the Enterprise, and the Enterprise interprets it properly,
mm-hmm.
which is what Riker does at the end.
Right.
He apparently doesn't give them a code, but he basically tells them to turn their shields down and then pretends to shoot the ship.
Right.
It was. I'm disappointed that there's no mention of Riker or Picard being asking the other person to pull their punch a little bit, you know, because they deck each other a couple times in this two-part here.
Mm-hmm.
No blood's drawn, though. They're good. They're good at it.
Do you think Picard was being, like, a little too cheeky when Riker showed up and he just, like, rattled off Riker's entire history?
Which
he knows because he's a space pirate somehow.
Right.
I've dealt with the Starfleet before, and they've only got, like, 8 guys who work for them.
I thought he was going to dig a little bit more like personal. I can't remember now if he's making up all of that stuff or if it actually happened where Riker was filed for insubordination. Mm-hmm. I would have gone a little bit more personal or something like that. So just, although that Picard is on the up and up, you know what I mean? It's like, you can't really take it anywhere other than he'd be a dick to Riker for no particular reason.
Well, I mean, just in terms of like trying to maintain his cover.
Sure.
When he's supposed to be this space pirate and he just happens to know a lot about this very specific Federation guy.
I see what you mean.
I don't know. I thought he was giving away a little bit too much. Okay, so one thing I wanted to talk about, because I don't know why this stood out to me, because maybe it's holdover from the last bar fight scene, you know, the one where they rough the guy up we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
When you're going down to a planet and you're trying to be inconspicuous, is a Klingon dressed in normal human clothing more or less conspicuous?
More, I guess. Unless he's 7 feet tall. But we'll get to, like, I think that he's, that's true.
Like, shouldn't really, if they're going down to be undercover, shouldn't he be throwing on his Klingon homeworld cosplay or something?
Right. I mean, I guess you could also, I think it's a lack of the show seeing you anything. I would assume if I was an alien and I saw any human, I'd be like, oh, they're in Starfleet.
Yeah.
You know, like there's no.
there's like an 85% chance that they're in Starfleet.
When you see a bunch of them walking around with tricorders, it seems strongly to indicate that they're in Starfleet. But yeah, it would be that kind of thing. Worf should wear his traditional Klingon gear, and the humans are just
which he doesn't have because he's not a real Klingon.
That's true. He read the wrong book. He got the wrong idea.
Klingon hipster.
Well, yeah, because we haven't seen any fallout since you guys did Rightful Heir, or Heir, I guess I should pronounce it correctly. Rightful Heir, where Klingon Jesus came back and Worf sort of. See, I guess that's the. We'll talk about that here now. In season 6, right,
mm-hmm.
There were a couple episodes to me that if. I felt that if you had ended the character's story at that episode, I felt it was fitting.
Mm-hmm.
Worf's rightful heir feels like the natural endpoint for the Worf storyline.
Yeah.
Data in Birthright Part 1, where he dreams, feels like the end of the Data story to me. So now we're stuck with the seventh season where I want these character episodes, but I don't really know where they can go with them.
Right.
That wouldn't be, that could end in one episode or two episodes instead of launching a whole nother arc for them.
Right, right. I felt the same way in The Wire, where the fourth season of The Wire specifically, this is turning into The Wire podcast, but
tread lightly here. Right? You're going to get very upset people here.
Well, no, I mean, the fourth season of The Wire was such a fantastic final season.
Yep.
And like specifically with McNulty's character, they wrapped him up so well. And then when they had to do their fifth season, it was like, well, what the hell else do we do with this character? And they just kind of turned him back into the shithead that he was before they moved him forward.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And like that really bummed me out. And I know exactly what you're talking about. We actually, on the Batman podcast that Sean and I are doing, we just did Heart of Ice, the big Mr. Freeze episode.
Yep.
And we had a very similar discussion where Mr. Freeze, he's kind of the only Batman villain who has a goal.
Sure.
And once he achieves that goal, there's really not really else much to do with him. He just kind of – that's sort of like the natural endpoint to his story. But then he always shows up doing something dumb with a bunch of, you know, thugs trying to steal a diamond or something.
Right.
It just doesn't feel right.
Right, yeah.
And I think it's the same thing where, you know, it would be really ballsy of a show like this to actually act on that and be and actually end their character storylines and then just kind of, you know, like, all right, well, we're done with Data for the next
right.
for the rest of the series.
He just packs up his bag and go. I mean, remember what we talked about in Second Chances. It was originally thought that Tom Riker was going to take the place of the dead Will Riker. And
right.
at the time, like, here's my conflict about all this. At the time, I would have thought it was annoying because if there's only one season of the show left, I'd rather have Will Riker stick it out.
Oh, absolutely.
So killing him off at that point doesn't do anything, although it would have opened up a whole new slew of storylines that they could have used. So you're stuck you're stuck in this kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't type thing. But I would have been very sad to lose Will Riker. I would have been sad at this point to lose any of the characters, but I do think that their storylines have wrapped up at this point.
Yeah, that's the tough thing is when you do get into character stuff, you do at this point have to make really, in order to keep it interesting, you have to make kind of really, what's the word I'm looking for? Like
bold choice.
Character decisions.
Yeah, yeah.
That's why when you get into, you know, a show like Friends or something, when they're going into their ninth or tenth season, it's like, well, everybody's already slept with everybody else.
Right.
Let's give someone a baby, you know?
And if you guys are watching Friends at home, stop when the roommates switch. Me and Amy recently rewatched it. When Chandler or Joey moves in with Rachel, that's when the show just falls completely apart. You can tell that they were just really struggling. They're like, how do we mix this up? It's like, just have them switch apartments. And
this
it doesn't work.
I mean, Next Generation hasn't gotten to that point. I think if they had kept Tom Riker, that would have been the point. That would have been it.
Yes, right.
But they still have, you know, they still get stuff to work with. It's just they're choosing not to, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. All right, well, let's wrap up this one. We can move on to the second part. Guys, we're going to play an audio clip. We'll come back with our final thoughts and ratings for the first part of Gambit. Gambit Part 1.
Commander, are you all right?
Tell him.
Mr. Data, withdraw the Enterprise. That's an order.
That is impossible, sir. The ship you are on has violated a Federation outpost. It is my duty to stop it.
I'm your commanding officer. I'm giving you a direct order. Understood?
Commander, if you could explain.
I've never explained my orders before. I'm not about to start now.
All right, Clay. So, Gambit Part 1. You've had Liaisons, and now you've had Gambit Part 1. You sounded a little bit more positive on this one than Liaisons, but where are you going to end up for this guy?
Yeah, despite my mini meltdown on the show itself, I did enjoy this, kind of. I shouldn't say kind of. It was fine. It was fine. It was a 3 for me. It's like everything I said. It doesn't do a lot for me at this point.
When did you start feeling this way in the show? Is this like a very recent thing, or is this a... Were you starting... Because I remember we had... Like, season six, the episodes felt fresh to me. Like, Second Chances is season six and stuff like that. You know, like, those are good episodes in, like, a fairly late run of the show. It feels more recent to me that there's been sort of a problem with it.
Yeah, I don't think that there's a... It's I don't think there's a line. I don't think there's a line where it's like, all right, now I'm just kind of tired. It's just the stories that they're deciding to tell, at least the ones that I'm watching, are not interesting me at this point because everything, like we talked about, they're not dealing with the stuff that I find interesting at this point. When you get an episode like this, which is, it's fine. It really, starting the show with them presuming Picard is dead is you know, a big leap. When it starts with stuff like that, it's just, it feels so overdone.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, it's got bits and pieces of a lot of other stuff that they've already done, and it feels very recycled.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not focusing on characters, where at this point I feel like they should be laying into those characters.
Right.
And really make it, because that's where, you know, you can tell the cast is having fun when they get to play their characters.
Yes.
And when you get to see how those characters interact with each other. And they're at that point where that's the stuff that they should be doing, or at least telling more interesting stories. Like the last, Liaisons I didn't like, but the last couple, like those last two Riker ones that I did, I thought were great. The Tom Riker one and the
Frame
one
of
where
mind.
He's where he's in the
insane asylum.
Yes, yeah. Insane asylum. Sorry, because you know they're letting the characters breathe and they're doing some weird shit. That's what they that's what they should be doing, not just okay space pirate stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Where they're going after some nondescript thing, and the villains are kind of bland.
Yep.
And
you don't understand their sort of purpose, although maybe that'll be revealed, but in part one you don't really understand it.
Yeah, the main bad guy looks like a bad drawing of Ricardo Montalban as Khan.
He did remind me a lot of Khan.
Yeah,
he's very, very reminiscent of, like, just his appearance, I think, for some reason.
Yes, not his acting,
right.
Just the way that he looks.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's fine. It's probably one of the better two-part, I don't know.
I'll say that as a whole, which we'll get into, I think this is one of the actually stronger two-parters the show has ever done. Maybe top four. It would be Best of Both Worlds, Chain of Command, and then I think it might be this one.
Yeah. But, you know, it's even the end of this one. It's like they end it with the bad guy ship shooting at the Enterprise. And it's like, oh, what's going to happen to the Enterprise? Well, I don't know. It just didn't land for me. All the weight that they were trying to get across felt really weightless.
Tune in next time. Yeah, I'm going to give it so you give it a 3. I'm going to give it a 4 just because it felt a little bit fresh to me. It started to wear on me as it went, but the amount of action felt kind of new for the show and what was going on. And I really did think that they could have turned this into a movie. Like, you have to flesh it out, obviously, and make it actually more dramatic in a certain way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the space pirate captain would have to be someone like Khan. Like, would have to be more threatening.
Do they ever tell you why Picard is undercover? I feel like they do. He was looking at the ruins or something, and then he just pretended to be a smuggler. Is that what it was?
Yeah, something like that. He was out on, I think he's on vacation, right?
He's on vacation. All right.
I think he was on vacation. Let me see here. He reveals he went to study an archaeological site but found it had been ransacked. Tracing those responsible to a bar, he confronted them but was captured. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
So that's it. I guess he's on vacation or something. He's doing something, another captain's holiday. I'm going to give this one a 4. I think it's a slightly above average only because it's trying to do something a little bit different, even though I don't think it's focusing, like we said, on the right things at this time. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of callbacks to previous stuff. Like, if you're a big fan of the show, you'll appreciate, like, the Galen callbacks and stuff like that. I think that there must be, like, 9 different planets that they mentioned that have appeared in previous episodes. It's all that kind of stuff. And it's not a great episode. It's a pretty decent opening to a two-parter, I think.
Mm-hmm. I feel like the conceit where they think Picard is dead. I think that would work better as a movie.
Yes.
Or, like, if not, like, a movie, like, if they had gone into doing, like, you know, two-hour TV movies every couple years or something like that.
Yep.
Starting one where that Picard seems to be dead, that would be an interesting way to do one of those.
I mean, in a movie, they needed more time, right? Because, like, you could have the entire first act of the movie be without Picard, but the show can only not have him for about 7 minutes,
yeah,
you know, before it's, like, too long.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd agree with that. And, like, Picard would have, you know, it would have been, realistically, it's impossible to keep Patrick Stewart out of the movie or whatever. But that would have been the way to do it, like you were saying. Anyway, mm-hmm. guys, mm-hmm. thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. If you're on YouTube, like and comment. iTunes, rate and review, all those podcatchers that you listen to. Facebook.com/TheBenskyPodcast. Leave a like and a comment there. We have a small but loyal following over there. And then Patreon.com, you can get exclusive content if you go to Patreon.com/TheBenskyPodcast. Couple bucks a month, you get exclusive stuff. Me and Clay did Jurassic Park recently. It's been a big hit. People seem to like that one.
Did they? Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it had a good amount of likes and comments and stuff like that. So people like that one. Guys, thank you very much for listening.
People rebelling against your awful takedown of Jurassic Park that you tried to throw on everybody.
They sent me the Wikipedia of burn centers in the U.S. and that old chestnut of a joke. And I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Guys, thank you very much for listening. Clay, thank you for coming on.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And I will see you in a couple days with Gambit Part 2.
Or will we? Cliffhanger.